the recipe. This is a love attack. I know when our body's back, it's just like any fat. It retracts before impact. And just like fashion, it's a passion for the withered and hip. If you got the goods, they'll come in by it. Just to stay in the click. So don't delay, act now. Supplies are running out. Allow if you're still alive. 6 to 8 years to arrive. And if you follow the make, be out tomorrow. But if be out the shine, you might as well be walking on the sun. With the tears, because the baby's life has been revoked. The bond is broke, got so choke up and foe. Kiss on the clothes of Mr. Wills, I can't reform. No God like Hocus Pocus, so don't sit back, kick back and watch the world get worse. Rap music in your neighborhood is under attack. Put away the crack before the crack put you away. You need to be there when your baby's old enough to relax. Supplies are running out. Allow if you're still alive. 6 to 8 years to arrive. And if you follow the may be out tomorrow. But if be off the shun, you might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun.
Ah, that was Smash Mouth. You're listening to Canada on Cannabis. This is the show that believes the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. I'm Craig Canada, and I'm your host tonight. You're on Free Radio. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, and also streaming live on the internet, www.freakradio.org. That's FreakRadio. And, okay, we've got Lynette, Letitia Pepper on the line, I think. Can you hear me, Letitia? Is that Letitia? It's not Letitia. Hello? Okay. Then, I don't know who that was. But this is, as I was saying, Free Radio, Freak Radio, Santa Cruz. I've got the archives of my shows at on my website. I have a blog, and the address for that is www.palmspringsbum.org/blog. That's palmspringsbum.org. And off of that, up in the top corner, there's a little menu that says home, broadcast, bookshop, and contents. And if you click on broadcast, it'll take you to the archive page for this show, Canada on Cannabis. Also, you could also type in www.palmspringsbum.org/blog/Canada on Cannabis. That's CANADA-ON-CANNABIS. Need to take a little bit of something to drink here. Just lost the microphone. The mic has a short in it. Wonderful. It seems to be working now. So, mic's still alive. Yes. Letitia Pepper has done an analysis of. She's brought a lawsuit against. I believe it's Riverside County. It could be San Bernardino. I feel remiss that I haven't looked that up before the show tonight. And so we're going to be talking about that and also initiative. Steve Cubby has an initiative. And I believe they decided to call this initiative the Treat Marijuana Like Wine initiative. I guess you could call it Jack Harer Light, and I've read over it once, twice. I haven't really sat down and studied it, yet. I have been putting that off for as long as I can. But, while we're waiting for Letitia to call, and hopefully she'll be calling in a few minutes, I thought, I'd read something I ran across, today, regarding what's going on in Colorado. And Colorado is going through pretty much the same thing with that California is currently regarding marijuana initiatives. If you recall, the only initiative that the marijuana organizations did not support were the ones that exempted medical use from any excise taxes, any sin taxes. Three initiatives and one piece of legislation, Tom Ammiano's bill, that would have legalized or decriminalized marijuana, legalized it actually. And all of them except Prop 19 exempted medical marijuana patients from the tax. Anyway, what I want to read to you here is it's legalize2012.com, Colorado Constitutional Amendment. And it's press release May 20th, 2011. And there's a link. I mentioned my blog, and I'll mention it one more time and then not mention it anymore for the rest of the program. It's www.palmspringsbum.org/blog. And on the right-hand side panel, I've got a Facebook fan box. And there's a scroll box in there that has links. And so you can find that if you want to reference this, you can find the link if you go to that Facebook fan box, and there's, as I said, a scroll bar with these various links that I post on my Palm Springs Bum page on Facebook. And if you go that far, click it and become a fan. I certainly. The bigger the number it says on that fan box, the bigger my ego gets. So, anyway, back to this press release. This is the legalize2012.com Colorado Constitutional Amendment. And the headline or the title of this is Restrictive Pot Initiatives Complicate Colorado Cannabis Reform. Will out-of-state interest amend Colorado's constitution again? On the heels of historic grassroots victories in the state legislature, Colorado cannabis patients and advocates are confused and surprised by an attempt to undermine these victories by a conservative faction of national and local drug policy reform groups. According to the Denver Post, members of the Marijuana Policy Project, the Drug Policy Alliance, Safer and Sensible, developed 8 different versions of a ballot initiative and filed them with the Colorado Secretary of State on Thursday, May 19, 2011. The MPP/DPA/Sensible/Safer initiative would create a constitutional amendment for a marijuana distribution system controlled by law enforcement. I want to interject here that, these are the same organizations that have been telling us for years now and asking us for money on the premise that it's a health issue, not a law enforcement issue. Back to this press release. The filing comes as a surprise to other cannabis reform groups in Colorado. Members of the Legalize 2012 campaign, that sounds like that might be my caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Is this Letitia?
No, I'm just calling because I could hear you at the beginning of your program, but now it's just it's not coming through at all, and I was just wondering if other people were having that problem.
Oh, that's great. I guess this might... you cannot hear me at this very moment?
No.
Okay. Would you hang on? But you can hear me over the phone, huh?
Yes.
That is very bizarre. That is extremely bizarre.
This is what I'm hearing on the radio.
Something
like that.
Okay, let me try this one. Let's see. This is number... can you hear me on the radio now? Can you hear me on the radio now?
No.
No?
Now, I'm in Capitola, but usually I can hear you.
I don't mean on the radio. I mean on the... you can usually hear me on the internet, on the FM, but you can't hear me now. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. I can hear you over the radio usually, but I cannot hear you over the radio now.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that. I don't know what I can
say. Okay.
I don't know what to tell you about that.
Well, I just wanted to report in. I didn't know if other people were having that problem.
Yeah, we should be on the air at 101.1 FM.
No,
I
just have a radio, so.
Well, that's what I was saying, FM. Okay, well, thanks for letting me know that.
All right.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, so I have been informed that we are not being heard on the FM. Hopefully we're being heard on streaming on the net. I was in the middle of reading this article in the Denver. Well, it's not the Denver Post, but it's talking about the Colorado, what's going on in Colorado with MPP and the other so-called activist organizations. So I'll be reading this again. This is Legalize2012.com, Colorado Constitutional Amendment. And this filing, on the heels of historic grassroots victories in the state legislature, Colorado cannabis patients and advocates are confused and surprised by an attempt to undermine these victories by a conservative faction of national and local drug policy reform groups. According to the Denver Post, members of the Marijuana Policy Project, the Drug Policy Alliance, Safer and Sensible, developed 8 different versions of a ballot initiative and filed them with the Colorado Secretary of State on Thursday, May 19, 2011. The MPP-DPA Sensible Safer Initiative would create a constitutional amendment for a marijuana distribution system controlled by law enforcement. And I was just ranting about that. As I already said, these are the people who have been telling you for years it was a health issue, not a law enforcement issue. And so now they have snuck in an initiative, filed one that would be controlled by law enforcement. This filing comes as a surprise to other cannabis reform groups in Colorado. Members of the Legalize 2012 campaign, who had been working on their own ballot initiative language for over a year, were shown a draft of one of the MPP-DPA initiatives only a few days ago. The MPP-DPA Safer Sensible Alliance never indicated that they were on the verge of filing. On the contrary, they had seemed open to listening to ideas from other groups in the state. Westword editor Patricia Calhoun had recently agreed to moderate a community policy debate on June 22nd amongst all the cannabis reform groups that were considering running ballot initiatives in 2012. The event was to be called The Great Legalization Debates of 2012, Part 1, scheduled from June 22nd at Castleman's Bar and Venue in downtown Denver. The debate was conceptualized by the Cannabis Policy Institute as a way to start to bring the cannabis movement together in Colorado to search for common ground in future cannabis policy reform and 2012 ballot initiatives. Mason Tevert of SAFER had agreed to participate and had just sent an email to Legalize2012.com on May 16, 2011 that said, "I can't stop thinking about how exciting and impactful it would be if we were able to join forces and move forward together. It would be such a huge catalyst for the movement, and we could really make things happen." Given Tevert's letter on Monday, Laura Creho of the Legalize2012.com campaign and the Cannabis Therapy Institute was very surprised to hear that they had filed the initiatives today. "I am not sure why they did this without telling anybody." "Even the legislature gave us more notice to comment on their proposed legislation than they did. It really shows their bad faith. This is the same strategy that MPP-DPA used in 1998 in Colorado when they wrote Amendment 20. Their goal is to divide and ignore the grassroots and win an initiative no matter what the initiative says." As of 11:30 p.m. on Thursday night, no mention of the eight initiatives is made on any MPP-DPA Safer Sensible website. SAFER did provide Legalize2012.com with a draft on May 12, 2011. And they've got a link that says click here to read it. And as I said, if you want to find this article on the right-hand side of my blog and the sidebar is a fan box with a list of articles. This will be among the links. According to the May 12 draft, the proposed constitutional amendment mimics HB 10-1284, a law created by the Colorado legislature in 2010 that gutted Colorado's medical marijuana law. HB 10-1284 took control of the medical marijuana program out of the health agency and gave it to law enforcement within the Department of Revenue. Senator Chris Romer, D. Denver, who authored the HB 10-1284, said the bill was designed to put 80% of dispensaries in Colorado out of business. Many grassroots cannabis reform groups, legislators, and attorneys in Colorado opposed HB 10-1284 and lobbied aggressively against it for almost 2 years. The bill attacked patient privacy and removed constitutional protection from caregivers and patients. By the way, as an aside, Colorado is the only state, I believe, that has the constitutional protected right to sell marijuana. The bill attacked patient privacy and removed constitutional protection from caregivers and patients. The bill created a whole new branch of law enforcement dedicated to cannabis. The MCC model has been subjected to increasingly expensive overregulation, and many of the smaller businesses have been forced out. The DOR has been adversarial to the medical marijuana program from the beginning. That's the Department of Revenue. They have denied licenses without good cause, harassed applicants, held secret meetings, and are on the verge of going online with a massive patient and medicine tracking database and surveillance system that will track every seed and gram in the state. The Department of Revenue has not granted one license to an MMC applicant, that's medical marijuana something, cooperative applicant, in almost a year since they started accepting applications. Why does MPP and DPA Sensible Safer trust the Department of Revenue so much and want to give them total control over cannabis in Colorado? I must say a lot of us have been asking ourselves this question about our organizations in a lot of states. I would at least wait until the Department of Revenue had issued one license to an MMC applicant successfully before I submitted an initiative law that let the DOR run a whole new marijuana program, says Creho. And this section is titled Initiative Language Flaws. Safer provided legalize2012.com with a draft on May 12, 2011. Check here to read it. This is the initiative. Ironically, Denver conservative cannabis group Safer has always espoused the belief that marijuana should be treated like alcohol. But the MPP-DPA Sensible Safer initiative treats cannabis much stricter than alcohol. By limiting cannabis consumers to 1 ounce at a time, unlike alcohol with no limits, the MDSS initiative will ensure greater scrutiny on cannabis consumers than any alcohol consumer ever had. Currently, 2 ounces or less of cannabis is a petty offense in Colorado and results in only a ticket and $100 fine. Medical patients are also allowed to have 2 ounces under Amendment 20. Creating a constitutional standard that only 1 ounce is safe will only cause confusion. A 1 ounce standard will also require the Department of Revenue to convert their massive patient and medicine tracking database and surveillance system to a massive database for all cannabis and cannabis users to track how much cannabis is bought and sold. The MDSS initiative does contain some language that attempts to restrict the Department of Revenue from gathering names on cannabis consumers, but this provision is not well worded and may be thrown out as unenforceable. The MDSS initiative would also allow for and set constitutional standards for driving discrimination, employment discrimination, and tenant discrimination of marijuana users. The MDSS initiative makes driving under the influence of marijuana a new constitutional crime, completely wiping away victories scored by patient advocates to kill a THC DUI bill in the state legislature this year. Reminds me of what Prop 19 did. Some of you remember Tom Amiano had legislature $50 an ounce on recreational use, non-medical use, and no tax on medical use. He'd introduced this bill in the legislature in California. And so then when Prop 19 announced for the ballot, all consideration of the legislature had absolutely no reason to pass it either before or after the election. If it had won, if it had lost, they would have had no reason to pass it. Absolutely none. Prop 19 took any reason away that they had to pass that legislation. So, the MDSS initiative, and this is in Colorado, makes driving under the influence of marijuana a new constitutional crime, completely wiping away victories scored by patient advocates to kill a THC DUI bill in the Senate, in the state legislature this year. Some of the 8 versions of the MDSS initiative reportedly also allow a 15% excise tax, which will create more funding for the Department of Revenue Marijuana Police Force. This is something else that Oakland's initiative would have done, Prop 19 in California. Be taxing the sick and dying to put marijuana users in jail. The MMED already has a budget larger than the entire Colorado Bureau of Investigation, all funded by the medical marijuana industry. Do we really want to be handing over 15% per ounce extra tax to buy more handcuffs? This initiative exacerbates the situation created by HB 1284. One group of cannabis consumers is now paying to prosecute, harass, and discriminate against the other group of cannabis consumers. Good pot users paying to jail bad pot users. We have seen with the bloated MMD budget, MMED budget, that all their money is going to investigate, track, and harass medical marijuana consumers. Do we really want to unleash this law enforcement force onto all cannabis users? This is not legalization. The lies have been clearly set now in the Division of Cannabis Policy Reform in Colorado. The MPP-DPA Sensible Safer Initiative has chosen to ignore any local efforts for a real legalization ballot initiative in favor of writing an initiative that appeals to law enforcement. They have decided that they don't want to work with anyone else in the state and are unwilling to compromise on their language. They have decided that instead of helping to fix the laws in Amendment 20, which they wrote, they would amend the Colorado Constitution with another unworkable, poorly written law with little support among longtime activists. This next section here is titled The History of MPP-DPA in Colorado. This unilateral move by MPP-DPA Sensible Safer cast doubts that any cannabis law reform ballot initiative in Colorado would be successful. These conservative groups seem to want to duplicate the strategy of dividing and ignoring the progressive grassroots, as MPP-DPA did in their medical marijuana campaigns of 1997-98 nationwide. Many people don't know that billionaire currency manipulator George Soros funded Amendment 20 in 1997-98 through the Marijuana Policy Project, headed by Rob Campia in D.C., and the Open Society Institute, headed by Ethan Nadelman. Nadelman now works with the Drug Policy Alliance, based in New York and California, but is also funded by Soros. Bill Zimmerman and Dave Fratello of Americans for Medical Rights, based in Santa Monica, California, were hired to run the 1997-98 medical marijuana ballot initiative campaigns in four states. Dividing grassroots support. Then, their strategy was to ignore and divide grassroots support for cannabis reform by introducing initiatives that competed with initiatives sponsored by local groups in Colorado, Maine, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. In D.C., MPP submitted a competing initiative to the local ACT UP Medical Marijuana Initiative after the locals had already collected thousands of signatures. AIDS activist Steve Michael literally died while fighting MPP's plans to destroy the ACT UP Medical Initiative. A few weeks before his death, he was attacking them in the press. Quote, over my dead body, California firm admits to plans to run own initiative in D.C. And there is a link for that. The strategy to divide the grassroots was intentional. Read, Can We Win the War Without the Troops? An analysis of the Americans for Medical Rights Medical Marijuana Ballot Initiative strategies in the 1998 general election. Cannabis activists statewide are shocked by the MPP-DPA Sensible Safer strategy of refusing to work with any of the other activist groups working on statewide cannabis initiatives. MPP-DPA does not support past initiatives. After the signatures for Amendment 20 were collected in 1998, Americans for Medical Rights disconnected their phone and took down the website. MPP-DPA has not provided a dime to help support amendment or any of the other laws they have written in other states. Every attorney in Colorado agrees that Amendment 20 was poorly written, but MPP-DPA has not supported efforts to fix their law through the legislature or the legal system. They amended the Constitution with what they called a symbolic amendment in 2000, despite the concerns of local activists. They will try the same thing again in 2012. We will be left with another unworkable and poorly written law in the Colorado Constitution. This is what they did in last year in California. They were trying to amend our state law, our constitution, with an unworkable symbolic law. The only reason that anyone who read Proposition 19 when you got down to it, after you'd argued about everything, the only thing they could say for it was it sent a message. Yeah, it sent a message that if it had passed, it would have sent the message that Californians have the reading comprehension of a 6-year-old. I'm going to finish this article. I'm almost to the end of it. And we're talking about Colorado here. Cannabis activists statewide are shocked by the MPP-DPA Sensible Safer strategy of refusing to work with any of the other activist groups working on statewide cannabis initiatives. MPP does not support past initiatives. Actually, that was the end of the article. End with saying there's an action alert and asking you to call these people. I really don't see that calling these people MPP or DPA is going to do any good. They're impervious to what you think of them. I really don't think that. But I think this is a well-written article and certainly reflects a lot of what I have been seeing. For a long time now. In fact, what I think I'm going to do, if this will work, I keep ranting on Dale Sky Claire Jones and Prop 19 and Normal. And in their recent conference, back in L.A. before the election, she was standing up telling everybody that tomatoes are taxed. And if you remember, Prop 19 was the law that would require cities to tax marijuana in order for it to be legal. In other words, if they didn't pass a tax, then according to Prop 19, marijuana could not be legal. Cultivation, commercial cultivation or distribution would not be legal. And the courts would probably interpret that to mean medical marijuana. But I've got on my website, I've got the... videos from their conference in Los Angeles, and this was the 19th of March. And so what I'm hoping to do is about 40 minutes into this. Let's try 30 minutes. What happens is about 45 minutes. This is the legalization video. I think I've got 6 or 8 from the Los Angeles conference and another 6 or 8 from the conference they had in Berkeley earlier this year, California Normal. And so at 45 minutes into this legalization video, Dale Sky Claire Jones essentially says that we had nothing to do with the taxes. And keep in mind that Dale Sky, you need to watch these people. Dale Sky Claire Jones was chancellor of Oaksterdam U. Oaksterdam U is a so-called think tank that came up with Proposition 19. Richard Lee, one of the official proponents of Proposition 19, owns Oaksterdam U. The other official proponent, Jeff Jones, is the husband of Dale Sky Claire Jones. And before they passed or tried to pass Proposition 19, before they got the signatures to put that on the ballot, before Richard Lee paid $4.4 million to fund the signature drive out of his own pocket all by himself, they passed Measure F in Oakland. And all of our organizations thought it was a fine idea to tax medicine. I believe it was St. Pierre who was quoted in an article about that. I've got a quote about him. But none of these have ever stood up. These are the same people that brought you the tax. And so now here in Colorado, this was in Los Angeles. Here in Los Angeles at the Normal Conference, we've got Dale Sky Claire Jones telling us that she didn't have anything to do with the tax. This is like 40 minutes into the legalization video. And this is on my blog, on my show page down at the bottom, I've got a video gallery. And this is the second video in that gallery.
Control much of anything.
I just started at 39 minutes.
like, yeah, obviously we have this access to George Soros, but, you know, the guy makes his own decisions, and those of you who know the outcome this past cycle was he gave $1 million at the very end.
By the way, this guy that's speaking is Ethan Nadelman, who I was talking about in the article.
At a point where we pretty much knew that it would not, that the money was coming in too late to affect the outcome, but it was a gesture on his part, and it actually was fairly important within the national movement, because that was actually the first time that George Soros actually endorsed the legalization of marijuana. And, he has been a supporter of medical marijuana for many years, but he is never on record and had never invested in full-on legalization. So that is really, that's very important. And just the thing to say about money is this movement has access to certain number of deep-pocketed donors who believe in this reform in their bones. Right? There are a handful of very rich guys who believe in this reform. Historically, though, it just needs to be said. And I imagine you're going to hear some version of this afternoon in the panel that Dale mentioned. This movement does not actually have access to enough money to change the minds of most of the people who are going to vote in 2012, whether we like it or not. We have access to millions of dollars. Millions of dollars in the state of California is really, I mean, you look at, Prop 8, the Marriage Equality Initiative, right? That was $40 million on both sides. Like, we don't have access to remotely that kind of money. We have access to some millions of dollars, which is enough money who was it that said $7 million? $7 million, that's 2 weeks of advertising in the state of California. That's 2 weeks of a credible statewide media ad buy. That's not enough money to change. That's enough money to shift some people who are soft yeses to voting yes for something. But, for those of us who want to win this thing, we just have to be realistic about how much money we have access to, how much money some of these deep-pocketed people are likely to give, how much they've historically given. And there's a very limited amount that we actually have access to given the stakes that are in front of us.
I really like everything Stephen just said, and I actually want to make one more comment. In response to Lanny's comment about the other big money drug policy organization comparing DPA to MPP, all of us, we're only as big as the people behind us, all of you. And for some people, those people have deep pockets, but for other people, it's a thin wallet. And if you think about the number of regular marijuana users that there are in this country, about 17 million people, in addition to all of the other taxpayers whose money goes to fund marijuana prohibition, whether they use marijuana or not, if all of those people just gave $1 every year to any of these organizations, our budgets would be so much bigger. So I want you all to think about that. $1 per person, if all of those people gave money, it would make a really big difference. It wouldn't necessarily put us on par with the Prop 8 campaign, but it would make a big difference.
And keep in mind that when we went back and did the math, that Prop 19 worked out to be about $1 a vote when you looked at how much we spent versus how many votes we...
Okay, this is the reason I've been playing this for you. This is Dale Sky Claire Jones speaking here. So now listen to what she has to say. First of all, she's fudging a little here. It was more like $2 a signature, but anyway.
Yeah, it was about $1 a vote.
Yeah, I think shouldn't we talk more about, emphasize more about medical marijuana being medicine? A lot of people think medical marijuana, especially the federal government, wants to tax us because we're not really emphasizing medicine. If people still have their mind in the gutter, really need to get the Compassionate Use Act. I think we should start using a lot of slogans that emphasize Compassionate Use Act, medicine, because when marijuana is widely accepted as medicine and is prescribed by doctors, it cannot be taxed. And taxation, I think, was a big failure in the last bill. I think we have to address that.
Well, we were trying to tax adults, not patients. I want to make that clear, that part of the point was to subsidize patient use, meaning you don't pay for it because we tax the hell out of the adults who are just using it for fun. And that way, it's a cover of protection. So we didn't actually ascribe a tax to patients. I just want to make that clear. But I agree with you. Pardon? Well, what we were hoping is that the adults would pay for the patients.
Yeah, I want to emphasize also that California Woman's position is that we shouldn't be taxing medicine.
I agree.
Beyond the current sales tax, which is charged for herbal medicines anyhow. Marijuana should be treated as an herbal medicine, so the sales tax under California law is appropriate. But beyond that, we think the taxation is an issue for adult use, and it's actually sort of a carrot to lead the people to want adult use if we can offer some good tax money from it.
And if I may also make no mistake that as we walked in to have these conversations with many of these legislators, we didn't bring this subject up. They brought it up, and we knocked on their door and said, hey, we heard you were trying to slap a 40%.
Did you hear that? We didn't bring this subject up. Oh, yes, they did. They brought it up in the national media every time they had a chance.
The tax on medicine. Can we please talk about that and try to back them down? A lot of what we were doing was trying to ease off on this sudden attack that largely happened because of, you know, the melee. If you look at who was bringing these measures into the legislature, it's all Southern California elected officials that are trying to tax it because they feel as though they're not getting their fair share, their cut for the city. And so just like the melee in Oakland, and quite frankly, there was a lot of confusion between these large grow operations in Oakland and Prop 19. We had nothing to do with one another, but it was some bad timing to make it look like it was all about these big grows when all we were trying to do was protect the little guy. So there's a big difference between the perception of Prop 19 and the reality of the written word of Prop 19.
Okay, now this woman is Dale Sky Claire Jones speaking, the chancellor of Oaksterdam U. The people who brought you Prop 19. The people who brought you the first sin tax on medical marijuana in history, Measure F, in Oakland. These people sponsored Measure F. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Canada on Cannabis is the show, and I'm Craig Canada, your host. I'm hoping that Letitia Pepper will be calling in tonight to talk about Steve Cubby's initiative. You know, one thing I wanted to ask her, Dale Geringer of Normal was saying that he thought that it should be taxed, that marijuana should be taxed like an herb. And Letitia is a lawyer. And one of the things that's occurred to me regarding this is that it seems to me it could be illegal to make medical claims for herbal remedies or herbal preparations. Isn't it illegal for them to claim to make medical claims for their herbs? Anyway, you're listening to Canada on Cannabis, the show that believes that the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. And I think what I'll do now is, let's play some more of this video. This is actually I think I'll back it up just a bit. Listening to Dale Sky Claire Jones here. And the reason I'm playing this is because this is the woman who stood up a year ago in Los Angeles and said, tomatoes are taxed. I hope that video is still up. I was like, no, tomatoes are not taxed. Medicine is not taxed in groceries. Not in California. Medicine and groceries are not taxed. Necessities are not taxed. It's unethical to tax. And she's talking about here how she was trying to protect the little guy. Well, you know what, honey? Miss Chancellor of Oaksterdam U, a percentage tax is it hurts the little guy more. You know, patients who need 2 or 3 ounces a month, the most seriously ill patients, you know, need 3 or 4 ounces a month at $200. Well, they end up paying several hundred dollars in tax. You know, that's a big deal for somebody on a fixed limited income that maybe gets $700 or $1,000 a month, $1,000 if they're lucky, and trying to make ends meet on that. And so then you tax them $100 on their medicine. You might ask yourself, why are the people who are in charge of the organizations that are supposedly dedicated to ending marijuana prohibition so intent on taxing medicine? Ask yourself why. So let's see if I can move this back a bit to... Oh, that's working much better. I'm talking about my little video thing here. It's about 43 minutes where that guy asked a very pertinent question.
Medicine. If people still have their mind in the gutter, and really need to get the Compassionate Use Act, I think we should start using a lot of slogans that emphasize Compassionate Use Act, medicine, because when marijuana is widely accepted as medicine and is prescribed by doctors, it cannot be taxed. And taxation, I think, was a big failure in the last bill. I think we have to address that.
Well, we were trying to tax adults, not patients. I want to make that clear, that part of the point was to subsidize patient use, meaning you don't pay for it because we tax the hell out of the adults who are just using it for fun. And that way, it's a cover of protection. So we didn't actually ascribe a tax to patients.
Okay. The people who passed Measure F in Oakland weren't trying to tax patients. This Measure F is the 1.8% tax on medical marijuana.
So I just want to make that clear. But I agree with you. Pardon? Well, what we were hoping is that the adults would pay for the patients.
Yeah, I want to emphasize also that California Woman's position is that we shouldn't be taxing medicine beyond the current sales tax, which is charged for herbal medicines anyhow. Marijuana should be treated as an herbal medicine, so the sales tax under California law is appropriate. But beyond that, we think the taxation is an issue for adult use, and it's actually sort of a carrot to lead the people to want adult use if we can offer some good tax money from them.
And if I may also make no mistake that as we walked in to have these conversations with many of these legislators, we didn't bring this subject up. They brought it up, and we knocked on their door and said, hey, we heard you were trying to slap a 40% sin tax on medicine. Can we please talk about that and try to back them down? A lot of what we were doing was trying to ease off on this sudden attack that largely happened because of, you know, the melee. If you look at who was bringing these measures into the legislature, it's all Southern California elected officials that are trying to tax it because they feel as though they're not getting their fair share, their cut for the city. And so just like the melee in Oakland, and quite frankly, there was a lot of confusion between these large grow operations in Oakland and Prop 19. We had nothing to do with one another, but it was some bad timing to make it look like it was all about these big grows when all we were trying to do was protect the little guy. So there's a big difference between the perception of Prop 19 and the reality of the written word of Prop 19. And that's, you know, the devil's in the details, and that's where it gets hard in the long and short, both how it's written and how it's discussed. We can't control what the media focuses on necessarily unless we have those millions of dollars.
Next.
Hi.
Okay, so they're saying basically that they couldn't put one over on California because they didn't have enough money, so give them more money. Yeah, right. You're listening to Canada on Cannabis, the show that believes that the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. And I think what I'll do now is I will find some music, which I'm doing as we speak, as I speak, and we'll put it on. Here's one I like. Oh, it's not there. Okay.
Thank you.
And that was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Last Dance for Mary Jane. You're listening to Canada on Cannabis, the show that believes the prohibition of marijuana is a crime against humanity. I'm your host, Craig Canada. We're on Freak Radio Santa Cruz, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. On the internet, it's www.freakradio.org, and we should be streaming live, and I should have archives of this show, and I do have archives of my previous shows up on my website, and my website and the show for the archives of my shows is Palm Springs Bum. That's www.palmspringsbum.org/blog. The show page is www.palmspringsbum.org/Canada-on-Cannabis. And I think what I'll do now is I was thinking of playing for you Lanny Swerdlow from the Los Angeles convention in Normal, their conference, their Next Step conference. I changed my mind, and so hopefully this is Dale Schaefer. Dale, we two people went to jail last week. Dale Schaefer and Molly Fry for 5 years. They've been fighting battles in the court for 10 years. They were one of the first people to attempt to exercise their rights under Prop 215. A vocal activist, willing to put themselves out on the line for something they believed in, medical marijuana. And so they went to jail last week. And this is what they said before they surrendered themselves to custody. They had a 5-year sentence. Also, Roger Minch, 5-year sentence here in Santa Cruz. Roger Minch, they used to attempt to eviscerate the caregiver protection to the point that it was absolutely useless. Essentially, the California Supreme Court in the Minch decision decided that providing cannabis is not providing for the safety or the health of a patient. Essentially, they declared that it is not medicine. Nobody asked Dennis Perrone, who is the author of Proposition 215, what he had in mind when he wrote it. And what he had in mind, evidently, was a 5-story building in the center of San Francisco, in the main street of town, down at Van Ness and Market. The address was 1444 Market Street. I'm told that address no longer exists on Market Street, but it was 1444 Market Street in the middle of town, a 5-story building with 20-something thousand patients and 2 floors open to the public for consumption of cannabis, socializing and hanging out and building community and family and organizing. So I think that that's what they had in mind, not these places where you drive up and check your cell phone at the door hopefully Letitia Pepper will be calling in tonight. If not, hopefully I'll have her on later. I was talking earlier about Colorado, and evidently MPP has filed 8 initiatives with Colorado, so they're attempting to obviously. Are all 8 of them, are they going to pick one, or who knows what's going to happen? But that's similar to what happened in California. The last election, we had 4 initiatives trying to get the signatures for the ballot. Only one had the funding necessary for a signature drive, and that's because one person paid $1.4 million for the signature drive to get it on the ballot. Money they made from taxing medical marijuana patients, from taxing medicine. But Letitia, David Malamo Levine, who is one of the people associated with Mark Emery and Chris Bennett up there in Vancouver, and Steve Cubby have written supposedly a condensed version of Jack Herer's initiative, which is being which Michael Jolson is trying to get on the ballot, and I had here in California, and I had him on my show several weeks ago. I could tell you the date, I suppose, but I had technical difficulties in that show, and the archive crapped out. It didn't work, so I don't have an archive of that show. I hope to have Michael on again and talk about the Jack Herer Initiative. I believe they call it the California Cannabis Hemp and Health Initiative. And so Steve Cubby and David Mamma-Levine are pushing this initiative, which they say was written by Jack Herer's lawyer. And Letitia Pepper has some grave concerns about it. I was having a discussion on Facebook with David Mamma-Levine about this, and I was just sort of thinking out loud. Let's see, what did I say? Something about that would put it under the that calling it what it that the initiative would put cannabis under the jurisdiction of the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Department of the government, the ATF, the revenuers. And he called me a bunch of horrible things and blocked me, and so we haven't had any discussions since then. And evidently he's been going off of Letitia Pepper because she has objections to it, and I quite frankly, I don't know exactly what they are. I have not read. She's evidently written about them, but she has. I know that she was one of the. She brought up an interesting objection to Proposition 19, which no one else had mentioned. She states claims that the California Constitution prevents. Crops are not taxed. Crops are exempted from taxation in the California Constitution. And she made the point that Proposition 19 would have changed the California Constitution in that it would have allowed a crop to be taxed. That's a point I'd never heard before. I suppose of the opponents of Proposition 19, Letitia was probably the most... strident. I hesitate to use the word extreme, but her objections were more. She objected to it in more ways than other people did, than just about anyone else did. She found more wrong with it than in just about anyone I could think of. Anyway, it appears that she may not be calling in, or perhaps she will in a few minutes. What I'm going to do in the meanwhile is to play this tape of Dale Schaefer before he surrenders himself to custody for 5 years. He and Molly Fry were in... Placer County, was it? Anyway, this is going to be Dale Schaefer.
I don't think I need to stand up on a step. I'm tall enough for all of you to see me, I believe. What do you think about my son? Good son. Yeah. I have five of them, and I have two grandchildren, and my youngest daughter is having a child in October. This is what we're leaving behind. It's very difficult to find the words to express how I feel, how I should feel about this when I have to leave such a beautiful family behind, and especially considering what I actually did. Now, the medical marijuana laws were enacted by the Californians, but it's very obvious that the federal government and even the law enforcement folks in California want to hold on to the old lies that have been told for so many generations about this plant. In 1937, outright lies were told to our Congress to get the Marijuana Tax Act passed. Thousands of people went to prison for doing nothing more than using medicine they had been using all their life. We have to thank Timothy Leary for getting rid of that old 1937 Tax Act, because he challenged it. The Supreme Court said, of course, it's unconstitutional. But that didn't stop the federal government. Richard Nixon came right in and, with Congress's help, brought another lie to this plant when they enacted the 1970 Controlled Substances Act and put marijuana in Schedule 1, which says it has no accepted medical use and it's too addictive to be used. Now, that has been proven over and over again to be a lie, but it continues to be used. It was used in my trial. We almost got somewhere with Jimmy Carter, because he was thinking about decriminalizing marijuana. Unfortunately, his drug czar, Peter Bourne, got caught when rounds of people smoking pot and snorting cocaine, and Jimmy Carter had to get tough on drugs. And then came Ronald Reagan, who outright declared war on drugs again, and we got his wife Nancy breathing down everybody's throat about marijuana again. Now, the government did sort of the right thing by starting what they call the IND, the Investigational New Drug Study, where they gave some people that were going blind and basically dying the right to use medical swag from the government. We have one of our friends, L.D. Muzica, who's still alive up in Oregon. They get 300 medical marijuana joints a month. We brought L.D. to our trial. She wasn't even allowed to come in. They didn't want anyone to know that the federal government might, in fact, be using medical marijuana. That was kept away from the jury. Now, after they took marijuana away from medicine, it stopped being taught. But when they discovered the endocannabinoid system in the 1980s, they have to now teach medical students about the endocannabinoid system. This plant triggers a system in our body is responsible for homeostasis. The most important thing in our body is affected by cannabinoids. We're now trying to figure this out, but the pharmaceutical companies want to take these chemicals and they want to patent them and sell them as drugs. We need to keep the plant whole. Let it do what it does and what it's done for thousands of years. We need to allow people who can to grow their own. Yeah. We fought for years up in our neck of the woods, which is a production area, to allow people to grow their own. I ran for district attorney in my county so that we could get county guidelines. That was one of the reasons why I'm in the predicament I'm in right now. I sort of pissed off some people who didn't want one of them to be involved in law enforcement. Now, Molly and I also went to trial multiple times, and we stood behind our notes, and Molly got at least 25 people out of trouble, got them acquitted, because she testified on their behalf. Now, that irritates district attorneys. I'm a trial lawyer. I know when I go to trial, I want to win, and when I lose, I want to know why. And they knew why. They knew why because Molly Fry dared to stand up and tell them they're wrong and leave this sick person alone. And juries almost universally told the poor sick person to go home, and they wanted to have a come to Jesus talk with that district attorney about why you dared to do this. We also advertised on the radio. How dare us? Today, their advertisements are everywhere. I looked in Sacramento News and Review, there were pages and pages of them. They're all over the place. But 10 years ago, we were on the forefront. So what we did was to get under the skin of a lot of people who wanted to shut us up. Now, they waited until Angel Reich's case was decided by the Supreme Court. And within 2 weeks of that case being decided in June of 2005, we were indicted and arrested. They tried to get rid of my attorney, Tony Serra, by throwing him in jail, but it didn't happen. He still maintained his position as my attorney and came back to try my case. They tried to get rid of Tony Serra and Larry Lichter for a conflict of interest. The judge didn't allow that. We finally got our trial, but the jury had blinders on, and they were not allowed to see or hear the evidence of what had actually happened to us. What I was convicted of is what I basically admitted on the stand, that I grew marijuana for my wife and for myself and for a handful of sick people. The numbers, I believe, were 106. And once you get to that magic number of 100, they have you. That draconian minimum mandatory sentence is going to get 5 years of federal prison if you dare to have over 100 plants. That conspiracy law can be used to stretch it over 5 years, which is the statute of limitations for manufacturing marijuana.
You're listening to Canada on Cannabis. That was Dale Schaefer. He was speaking before going to jail for 5 years for providing cannabis for patients. What I was looking for earlier and wanted to play
something
tonight.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear.
Buffalo Springfield.
There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
Buffalo Springfield, an oldie but a goodie. One thing I'm going to do for you, do now for you, whoever's listening, is this is another video from the conference that Normal had in L.A. That was on March the 19th. And this is the... Medical Marijuana Conference, a video. This would be the third one on my on the gallery at the bottom of my, in the video gallery at the bottom of the, my page, my web page for the show. This is the third video I'm playing. And the people that are on this are Don Duncan, Yam Balanos, Eugene Davidovich, Lanny Swerdlow. Lanny, I remember when I did watch this video. I haven't watched all of these videos myself. I found them depressing for the most part. But when Lanny speaks, it's like the bolt of lightning struck that room. He just energized the place. Lanny is getting up on the up in the years. He's in his 60s now. He just keeps on keeping on. And these were filmed by Adela Falk of Wisdom Organics, I believe.
Well, hello again, everybody. Good afternoon. And if you'll come on inside, we're going to start the 3:30 panel now, Medical Marijuana Regulation, What's Next Statewide. And this panel, as you can see, is a big one. We've got a lot of distinguished speakers here for you. Each of the panelists is going to take about 5 minutes to talk to you. There's a timekeeper, and so we'll stay right on schedule. And then, of course, we'll be taking comments and questions from the audience as well. So let me start by reintroducing myself. My name is Don Duncan. I'm the California Director of Americans for Safe Access, and I'm also a 10-year veteran of the medical cannabis industry. I've helped operate medical marijuana facilities in Oakland and, oh gosh, everywhere, Berkeley, Los Angeles, West Hollywood, Palm Springs. So I've been at it a while and learned a lot of things by doing them wrong and by watching other people do them right. So, like I said this morning, I'm very excited about where we are in the state of California with medical cannabis right now, but we do have some obstacles, and so I'm going to just kick off this discussion this morning by talking a little bit more about what I spoke about this morning, about the backlash, and then about what Americans for Safe Access is looking at this year in the regulatory battle here in California, and then I'm going to introduce each of our panelists. So, as we talked about this morning, there is a certain backlash that we're feeling about medical cannabis in our legislative offices in Sacramento, in our city councils and boards of supervisors. In fact, you guys might remember in December that Los Angeles, Fresno, and Orange counties all banned medical marijuana collectives on the same day in December. And it was on that same day that Riverside County abandoned their plans to write regulations and decided to stay with the ban. So we've definitely seen a tangible outcome for this growing ambivalence about medical cannabis. One of the things that we need to help address that is, of course, statewide regulation for medical cannabis and for medical cannabis collectives and for cultivation so that we have standards that communities can feel good about and they can feel that these are safe, well-regulated facilities. Unfortunately, we don't have the capacity right now in the state legislature to adopt a bill or to fight off bad proposals. And so one of the things that Americans for Safe Access is working on this year as a high priority for our campaign is to rebuild our grassroots capacity and our capacity in the legislature so that we're ready for that sort of legislation in 2012. And of course, that involves a lot of training, like our putting patients first training for medical cannabis professionals and our new activist boot camp, which is a 2-day comprehensive training course in the skills to be a grassroots organizer. But we're also doing this in practice with a bill called SB 129. SB 129 is a bill by Senator Leno that will protect medical cannabis patients from employment discrimination. And this is a bill that we initially tried to adopt back in 2008. We passed the legislature and it was vetoed by the governor. And so this is unfinished business for Americans for Safe Access. We got involved in litigation in 2006, legislation in 2008, and now we're back under a new governor with an identical bill, which is now SB 129. So we're going to need you guys' help on that as we work to rebuild that grassroots base. We really need our lawmakers all around the state of California to hear from people about this bill and know that medical cannabis is a priority. And that is an important cornerstone to our efforts to rebuild that capacity in the grassroots and the legislature to get legislation passed. And so if you haven't done it already, come on upstairs to the exhibit room and pick up one of the action alerts about SB 129 so you can find out more about the bill and find out what you can do to help make sure that gets adopted. We strongly believe that if we use 2011 as a building point to get a bill passed for employment discrimination to protect civil rights, that we're going to be positioned in 2012 to do some really great things with statewide regulation. So that is a very, very brief take on the California campaign. I would love to talk with you guys more about it. I'm going to be upstairs after the panel. I hope you come by the table. But without further delay, I want to introduce our panel because they have a lot of important input for you guys. Do we have a timekeeper down there? I can barely see in the lights. Yes, okay, we have a timekeeper. Excellent. Okay, so let me start. I'm just going to go down in the order you're listed on the program. Let me start by introducing Michael Backus from Cornerstone Research. Michael.
Thanks, Don. I started cortisone research almost 5 years ago. We're science-based. We're really interested in the science of cannabis and cannabinoids and how you can optimize the production of the plant to address medicinal needs. But this is talking about next year, and next year is really important. We're missing some things, and we really need a few of them. We need a solid base of clearly explained science in Spanish and in English, okay? This is really important because there's been an explosion of cannabis science in the last 5 years around the world, and none of it gets any press in the United States. We live in a system in the United States right now where our media has a tough time making sound bites out of science. And because of that, a lot of really interesting information about how cannabis can be used to address an extraordinarily wide range of medicinal conditions never gets any press at all. And so the thing is that we need to digest some of the science in a clearly expressed fashion and get it out to everybody in the state. It's really important because it'll counter a lot of the arguments that have hit us so far. We need to frame an argument based on evidence that's inflected with genuine emotion to get people fired up about this. And it's the best approach to counter fear-based prohibitionists. Prohibitionists co-opt science by presenting biased research and bad science. We have to embrace all of the truth. We have to embrace the fact that marijuana has some adverse effects and it has some potential for abuse. And we need to take that ground before our opponents take it. In the past, we've always been in the position of reacting. It's time for us to be much more active because we have the evidence to counter any argument that's thrown our way. This base of medical discovery in the last 5 years is profound. It's profound on things like cancer. It's profound on things like basic appetite and metabolic issues that cover a range of conditions, including autoimmune disorders. The list is very long. The primary thing is marijuana can be made even safer, but the next generation of safer cannabis requires legalizing the science of cannabis, which is currently illegal in the United States. Medical cannabis is hamstrung by the lack of participation of...
You know, I'm sorry. I was playing this video for Lanny, and I don't know who that guy is, but he doesn't know crap about what he's talking about. Well, I was not listening to it. I was playing this video because there is later on something worth listening to, but that guy really doesn't know what he's talking about. And I found an article here by Letitia, which I thought I'd read to you. It was published on May the 19th. Do I still have a microphone? Yes, this is Adam's family house that we're living in, and that was Cousin It saying hello. Or was that Thing? That was Thing, wasn't it? This is the end point of the Cubby Shell game. The TCLW initiative was intended all along to change Prop 215 rights. This was May 19th, 2011. It was written by Letitia Pepper, I do believe. Yes, from email from attorney specializing in cannabis rights and appellate level legal issues, Letitia Pepper. Not everyone who gets this email will have been following the discussions among members of the Global Relegalization Discussion Group about Steve Cubby's initiative, the Tax Cannabis Like Wine Initiative, TCLW, for short, Tax Cannabis Like Wine. You got that, folks? Taking the medical out of marijuana. Oh, I never got a hangover from marijuana. I can think of a whole lot of things I never got from marijuana that alcohol would give you. But anyway, so the Tax Cannabis Like Wine Initiative. Back when this began, do I still have a microphone? Yes. Back when this began, I, Letitia Pepper, read the version then in circulation and said that TCLW, despite its provision that it was expressly not intended to affect medical users' rights, actually clearly did affect such rights. It turns out that Cubby and his team saw me and my opinions as a problem, since I'd been rather active in opposing Prop 19. What they failed to understand, however, was that while they knew who I was because I'd been willing to post my opinions, there were a lot of people in California who, having read Prop 19 for themselves, had not needed my opinion to decide that it was a bad thing and that it would change people's current rights to use cannabis under Prop 215. I think the same thing will happen with TCLW. But because they had decided to focus on me as their problem, Cubby et al. Then demanded that I show them why my opinion about TCLW was true. I explained in writing the problem and offered to fix it, but only on condition that what I did to fix their initiative stay that way so that the final initiative would actually not impair Prop 215 rights. They refused to agree to that. They then changed the language I'd pointed out as the Trojan horse part of the TCLW and claimed that fixed the Prop 215 problem. It didn't. It actually replicated the original problem, and I said so, and again explained why. You know, I just want to interject here that that's what they did with me back in the beginning. I posted on the bulletin board for Prop 19 that they hadn't exempted medical marijuana patients from any of their taxes or fees. And so then they added a little thing on the end which said except, and what it did, the way they did it was sneaky because it didn't really change anything. It didn't exempt medical patients from the taxes. They were claiming it did, but it didn't exempt them from anything. But I digress. I want to get on with this letter that I've been reading here by Letitia Pepper regarding Harrer Light is what I call this amendment written, being pushed by Steve Covey and David Mama Levine. They then changed the language that I'd pointed out as the Trojan horse part of the TCLW, and that's cannabis like wine is what TCLW stands for. The very name offends me. I want to interject something here, because the thing is that for me this whole movement is about the moral high ground. What we have are the pharmaceutical companies selling drugs. You know, the pharmaceuticals as prescribed are the leading cause of death in this country, and they have been for a long time. And we're not talking about overdoses here. We're talking about as prescribed. The side effects are horrible. And they're dangerous. And cannabis is not dangerous, and the side effects are minimal, if any. I've never had bad side effects from it. All the side effects I've found are very desirable. So I don't understand why these people are compromising our moral high ground here. The position has been that cannabis is medicine. It works. It works better than most every other pharmaceutical. People, pain patients, are able to eliminate or reduce their use of narcotics, heroin and the other opium, the pain narcotics, using cannabis. It does so many things, and you know, I was thinking earlier today that, you know, patients, very sick people, have been dragging themselves down to city councils and down to state legislatures for years, saying the pills don't work. They made me a zombie. They had all these horrible side effects, and cannabis works. And so our government has responded by essentially robbing these people and throwing them in jail. And I got off on that digression because I was reading this letter by Letitia Pepper discussing the Treat Cannabis Like Wine initiative being pushed by David Malmo Levine and Steve Cubby. Basically, this is the Vancouver group, Emery & Co., I called them, associated with Mark Emery. Though I think maybe that the Malmo parted ways with Emory some time back. Emory is in a U.S. jail now, and last I hear, they keep moving him around from one state to another and one jail to another, just keep moving him around. They did that to me when I was in jail, so people can't find you. But anyway, Letitia Pepper is talking about the Treat Cannabis Like Wine initiative. So they then changed the language I'd pointed out as the Trojan horse part of the TCLW and claimed that fixed the Prop 215 problem. It didn't. It actually replicated the original problem, and I said so and again explained why. Other people asked me to keep playing footsies with Cubby et al. Because they believed that the problems could be worked out, but I refused because I had come to believe that Cubby et al. Actually wanted to change Prop 215 rights. Why? Because you can't make a lot of money using a corporate model in a commercial cannabis industry. The Prop 19 and TCLW models, while average people can cultivate and share cannabis on a not-for-profit basis. And the reason people are investing in these initiatives is not to help the average person, but to help themselves. And after all the smoke and mirrors we went through in the discussion group, guess what? Cubby et al., through their Director of Activist Communications, David Malmo, I've got to scroll down here, and my computer's not copper, Levine, and after all the smoke and mirrors we went through in the discussion group, guess what? Cubby et al., through their Director of Activist Communications, David Malmo Levine, Cubby himself has remained silent, although he's been copied with these emails, have admitted that they never really intended to leave Prop 215 unchanged. Cubby et al., through their Director of Activist Communications, David Malmo Levine, have admitted that they never really intended to leave Prop 215 unchanged. Why? Because they want more dignity and freedom than Prop 215 gives people. In other words, they're too lazy to pay somebody $50 for recommendation. And cheap. Letitia Pepper did not say that. I did. But let's go back to what Letitia Pepper did say. But do you think TCLW makes that choice clear? Does it say that by voting for TCLW, you will be changing the rights under Prop 215? Or does it still state that it is expressly intended to not affect such rights? Of course not. So as people have been telling for some time now, it does appear that Steve Cubby is someone you can't trust. An opportunist bent on self-promotion, and if it means taking advantage of anyone else, like a few voters, then anyone else better watch out. As part of these efforts, Cubby has even claimed to be the co-author with Dennis Perrone of Prop 215. According to what Dennis once said to me, Prop 215 was a group effort. And if you look at the 1996 letter from Dennis Perrone that Cubby is now using to, quote, prove, unquote, that he co-authored Prop 215, you'll notice it mentions his cancer, but does not thank him for work as a co-author. So read the TCLW for yourself and decide whether you should help circulate it or not. My opinion, I'd pass. You know, when we were opposing Prop 19, those of us who did, what we were all saying is read the initiative. Just read it. Meanwhile, the people who were pushing Prop 19 were telling people not to read it, but to listen to what they said. You would ask them to quote, where does the initiative say that? And they would quote the whole thing. They would just copy the whole thing and waste a lot of space. But, you know, they couldn't. But they were telling people not to listen to what we said and accusing us of everything under the sun. Whereas the people who are opposed to these initiatives are saying, read the initiative. Just read it. Any fool can see what it does. They're counting on people not reading it. They're counting on people, the great mass of people believing that medical marijuana patients support these bills. They do not. They do not. Normal does not represent us. MPP, the Marijuana Policy Project, does not represent us. A Drug Policy Alliance does not represent us. They sold us out. They're out there pushing taxes on medicine. These people are not our friends. Someone who is possibly a friend, Steph Scherer, had something published the other day, a couple of days ago, in the Huffington Post. And I think in closing tonight, I'll read you this. Steph made some really impressive comments. I quoted her in an article I wrote about Normal. Normal Cultivates Division at Conference was the name of my article. I had a two-part article, and I quoted Steph, and I've got the video in the video gallery on my show page of her at the first conference in Berkeley. And I must say, I felt like cheering when she spoke. But this is what she has to say in the Huffington Post. And this was published on the 20th of May. And the title of it is "The Obama Justice Department is Forcing Legal Medical Marijuana Patients into the Illicit Market." Yes, and so are our organizations with these crappy laws that they're passing, like the one in Delaware. My word. Why would any people? They should be opposing that law, not supporting it. So this is Steph Scherer, Executive Director, Americans for Safe Access in the Huffington Post. In February, Oakland City Attorney John Russo asked the Obama Justice Department whether his city's plan to regulate large-scale medical marijuana cultivation would get the approval of the federal government. As expected, U.S. Attorney Melinda Hag responded to Russo with a declarative no. Little did patient advocates realize, though, that Hag's letter would begin a trend, resulting in similar U.S. attorney letters sent to local and state officials in at least 9 different medical marijuana states. Arizona, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Maine, Montana, Rhode Island, Vermont, and Washington. I'd just like to interject here. Thank you very much, Oakstertam U and Proposition 19. This cynical tactic of sending letters that threaten public officials with criminal prosecution is not new. The Bush Justice Department made similar threats against New Mexico officials in 2007. But it's now being used by Obama to obstruct the democratic process and impede the development of local and state laws regulating cultivation and distribution of medical marijuana. In Montana, more than 8 federal agencies, including the Drug Enforcement Administration, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, Internal Revenue Service, and the Criminal Division of Environmental Protection Agency, executed 26 raids. I want to read that for you again. This is in Montana. In Montana, more than 8 federal agencies, including the Drug Enforcement Administration, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Occupational Safety and Health Administration Agency, Internal Revenue Service, and the Criminal Division of the entire Environmental Protection Agency executed 26 raids on the same day the Senate was due to vote on a bill repealing the state's voter-approved medical marijuana law. The bill was ultimately passed by the legislature, but was later vetoed by Governor Brian Schweitzer. Then in April, U.S. Attorney Michael Cotter sent a letter to the state legislative leadership urging them not to pass a law that would regulate medical marijuana production and distribution. This federal action contributed to the development of a bill that not only criminalized this activity, but also is expected to drastically and arbitrarily reduce the number of patients in Montana. That bill was not vetoed by Schweitzer and has since become law. At the end of April, a day before the Washington State Legislature put a bill on Governor Christine Gregoire's desk that would have regulated medical marijuana production and distribution. The DEA raided 3 distribution centers in Spokane. The raids came 2 weeks after U.S. Attorney Michael Ormsby sent a letter to Gregoire threatening criminal prosecution if the law was passed. These actions compelled the governor to veto portions of the bill that would have licensed the same facilities raided a day earlier. The Associated Press reported at the time that Gregoire said she could not approve a measure that might put state workers at risk of federal criminal charges. Just as in Montana, the bill passed in Washington represented a serious erosion of patients' rights. A threatening U.S. attorney letter sent to the government of Rhode Island has resulted in the suspension of its recently passed but not yet implemented medical marijuana production and distribution law. Thousands of patients have been negatively affected by this suspension. Every time there's a raid or a threatening letter is sent to an elected official, hundreds, if not thousands, of patients are left wondering where they're going to get their medication. The federal government gets a lot of mileage from saying it doesn't target patients, but the reality is that large numbers of us are directly impacted by these federal actions. ASA has argued that such tactics have forced untold patients into illicit markets, thereby jeopardizing their safety and making them more vulnerable to arrest and prosecution. Fortunately, not all politicians have buckled under federal pressure. The Delaware legislature recently passed, and Governor Markell signed a bill that made Delaware the 16th medical marijuana state. In spite of recent threats to its neighboring states, Delaware boldly included a production and distribution plan for patients across the state. In similar defiance of federal intimidation, Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin is expected to soon sign into law a bill that will license 4 medical marijuana distribution sites, despite a Justice Department letter sent to public officials in that state. Patients commend Markell, Shumlin, and all of the local state and local and state officials who are standing up to federal interference. We need more of that kind of leadership. The letters come nearly 2 years after the Obama Justice Department issued a memorandum in October 2009 to the same U.S. attorneys, signaling a different policy from the prior administration. Even before becoming president, then-Senator Obama campaigned on the promise that he would not use Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws. However, today his administration is not only circumventing these laws, it is undermining the right of cities and states to implement their medical marijuana laws accordingly. Patients are sick and tired of broken promises and half-measures from the Obama administration. The president must answer for his inconsistent and harmful policies and work with us to address medical marijuana as a public health issue. Americans for Safe Access recently launched its Sick and Tired campaign to bring attention to the continued harassment, discrimination, and stigmatization of patients and the need for a comprehensive federal policy. Patient advocates are also seizing on a comment made by Governor Gregoire as she was vetoing parts of Washington's medical marijuana bill. According to the Seattle Times, Gregoire said she would use her position as chair of the National Governors Association to lead an effort to change marijuana federal classification. This presents a ripe opportunity to take the next step toward addressing medical marijuana as a public health issue. Join us as we work with governors and other key officials from medical marijuana states to take this fight to the next level. Well, I prefer myself not to take it to the next level, but to end it. However, it may very well be. It seems to me that this is not about, you know, we passed the law and the government has done everything, the federal government has done everything it can. To ignore that and to keep throwing people in jail for using a medicine that they can grow in their backyards. Evidently, well, the pharmaceutical company is the economy. The profits of the top 10 pharmaceutical companies In 2003, I think, on the Fortune 500, the profits of the top 10 pharmaceutical companies were in excess of the other 490 combined on the Fortune 500. You know, one of the things that people don't think about, you know, what is Santa Cruz going to do about housing for medical marijuana patients? Are they going to throw them out in the street? Are they going to evict them for smoking in public housing? Is there any public housing in Santa Cruz for smokers anymore? Or is this town one of those southern towns with the black and white water fountains, you know, smoking, non-smoking? You know, the black water fountain is the smokers, of course. Is that how it is here in Compassion Central, here in Liberal California? Most prejudiced place I've ever lived, and that includes Alabama. You're listening to Canada on Cannabis, and I was hoping to have Letitia Pepper on tonight. Hopefully she will be on my show in the future, and other people, and also Michael Jolson hopefully will be doing a show coming up to talk about the California Cannabis Hemp and Health Initiative. And I could just give out their website. I think it's www.cchhi2012.org. Yes, it is. And so if you are interested in working to get a decent initiative on the ballot for California in 2012, go to that website. They've been organizing for this, and we expect that the money people backed by Soros, who doubled down on Monsanto last year, the major backer of all the marijuana so-called reform organizations, George Soros, his fund doubled down on Monsanto last year. So you're listening to Canada on Cannabis, and it looks like we got about 6 minutes left in the show. I'm Craig Canada, your host. I think what I'll do is I'll give you my website blog web address. It's www.palmspringsbum.org/blog, and the page for the show with the archives on it and so forth is www.palmspringsbum.org/blog/Canada on Cannabis. That is CANADA-ON-CANNABIS. And I got links for the stuff that I've been talking about, for the articles and videos and so forth, on the right-hand sidebar in my fan page. If you click in that, I've got a Facebook page, Palm Springs Bum, with the stuff that I'm talking about and the discussions I'm having and so forth. If you want to reference any of that, that's how you can do it. We're on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and everybody needs money, so we have donate buttons, so click them. There's one at the bottom of my show page. Free Radio Santa Cruz has one on their page. It looks like I'm going to have to go up to the next level on my web hosting. Evidently, the archives have been fairly popular and are getting a lot of downloads. So it looks like I'm going to have to bump up to the next level on my web hosting. So financial contributions would be greatly accepted, gratefully accepted. So you're listening to Freak Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. I think what I will do at this point is find some music and put it on and try to make a graceful exit here. Let's see, what was I playing? Yes, I could hum. Don't you just hate dead air? It's like, how many seconds can the air be dead before you just really get tired of it? Okay, so good night all, and I'll see you next week. We'll be right back.
With the tears because the baby's life has been revoked. The bond is broke, got so choke up and forget. So don't sit back, kick back, and watch the world get bushwhacked.